Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner. Great to have you here this afternoon. Well, October is Pastor Appreciation Month, and throughout the month, we've been asking you to pray for your pastor and to tell him or her how much they're appreciated. We also have a way to honor your pastor and give them a break, which they probably need. And the way that we have to do that is by nominating your pastor to receive a one-week retreat package to Sunscape Retreats, where they get to bring their wife or their husband with them and go away for, I believe it's 6 days in beautiful Colorado. You can check out more about it on our website. You do not need to write an essay or tell us how much you enjoy having them as your pastor. There are no requirements like that. However, you can tell us how much you enjoy having them as your pastor, and we'd be happy to read that on the air. All you need to do is submit their name, your name, and just go to myfaithradio.com for details. It would be a much needed break, I'm sure, for anyone, and especially a pastor who's doing the work of God for you in your congregation. So since it's Pastor Appreciation Month, as soon as we were talking about that and ideas for shows, I wanted to invite a pastor whose words have made an indelible imprint on my heart because I read his book, The Land Between, during a particularly tumultuous time in my life. And I was so encouraged by his message that I find myself suggesting this book more often than others to people who come and say that they are weary or burdened or going through a time where they feel like they're stuck. And either I just happen to know a lot of people like that, or that is just a very common place that we find ourselves in as Christ followers. So regardless, I know that you will be blessed from what our author pastor has to say today. And so let me just introduce you to him, and he'll tell us and hopefully share some of that wisdom with us throughout the show. Jeff Mannion is an author. He's also a senior teaching pastor of Ada Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where he has served for more than 25 years. He and his wife, Chris, have 3 children, and we are just grateful to have you here. Welcome, Jeff.
Joe, I'm so pleased to be on your program today.
Absolutely. So I do have a feeling that a lot of people are living in this space that you call the land between, but maybe they haven't defined it as such yet. So kind of give me a taste of what it means to be in the land between.
Yeah, the land between is when we find our space in an undesired transition. Something enters our life that perhaps we did not see coming, we're not expecting, and it just throws us into this desert space. An unexpected illness, a parent in rapid decline. It's that telephone call at 2 o'clock in the morning, and the first words we hear are, "There's been an accident," and suddenly the ground shifts underneath our feet. We're in an office, and we hear the words, "We're downsizing, we're restructuring, and your position has been eliminated." Or how many of your listeners have been sitting in a living room or a dining room when they heard the words, "Your mother and I are getting a divorce," and suddenly everything changes. And this is what I've called the land between. We're not where we were. We're not where we're going to be someday, but right now we're in this between space.
So tell me how you came to this concept. Where in the biblical story, in the narrative, did you come and say, "Hey, this is the land between"? Take us to that point.
Yeah. It was about 5 years ago that I was studying the wilderness wanderings of the Israelites. And it was the famous story of the burning bush where Moses is a shepherd and he sees this bush that's on fire, but it's not burning. And he hears the voice of God. And Joe, part of the message to Moses is, "I will take the Israelites out of Egypt, the land of slavery, and lead them into the land flowing of milk and honey." And it's like there's this like comma or semicolon there. It's like out of the land of slavery into the land of promise. And nothing was said there about the wilderness, about the desert that they were going to have to pass through. And so when I began to explore what happened to the Israelites when they were in the desert, running out of food, running out of water, getting sick and tired of this food substance called manna that they ate every day. I was reading and I said, that's us. That's us when we're in transition, when we leave one space, we're heading to another space, and we've got to pass through this desert to get there. And just the unique challenges and opportunities that exist when we are in the land between, in undesired transitional space in life.
You know, I love how you say it's just a comma, because one of the things that made a big impact is when I saw you make a map and you put on the map this green location that was Egypt. You could see the topography and it was just beautiful and green and lush. And then you saw this green location that was what was called the Promised Land, and that was where he was leading them to. But the largest space on that map was this big, desolate place of nothingness called the desert. And I don't think that when we read that for the first time in Scripture, that he's bringing you from point A to point B, that we realize this huge area, and that they didn't even go all the way through it, but that's even another subject, but this huge mass of desert that they have to go through. Speak to that.
Yeah, and it was foreign territory. I mean, you talk about, you know, and I love showing the satellite map, you know, just a kind of a Google satellite map today with showing Egypt and how lush it is. And Joe, even though it was the land of slavery, things grew there. I mean, they had garlic and cucumber and fish from the Nile River. And so they enter that, they exit that space, it's called the Exodus, and they enter the desert. And God has them there for a reason. And it ends up being 40 years, but much of that time was disciplinary. But they had to be there 2 or 3 years to receive the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai, to build the Ark of the Covenant, to establish a covenant where God said, I will be your God and you will be my people. And so it's this massive desert, and some of it was unnecessary, but some of it was absolutely necessary for their spiritual formation. I think the question of the desert for the Israelites was, how does this unruly mob of ex-slaves become the people of God? So how are they supposed to transition from being the people of slavery to the people of God? And much of that work was supposed to happen in the desert.
I remember reading Exodus for the first time, and I would get to the point where something amazing would happen. I mean, name a miracle, something, God would do something amazing. And then literally a chapter later, then the Israelites are like, they're complaining again. And I would think, why do they not remember what just happened?
Yeah, they're a bunch of babies. I would never do anything like that.
And yet I find myself doing the same thing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, you've hit on something there, Joe, that I think is very important, is that in reading a story like that, it's possible for us to place ourselves above the characters and kind of look down on them for what they're doing. And I think sometimes it's healthier to place ourselves among the characters. And, you know, if I went 3 days without water, I might be screaming too. You know, if I had to eat manna, and it was manna, this food substance that they ate, it was like flakes, and then they would put it in like a mortar and pestle and grind it and add water to it, and it would make this mush. They were eating this breakfast, lunch, and dinner day after day after day. And so when finally it erupts after about 2 years, what I call the manna riots of the Sinai Desert, I think they've been, Joe, I think they've been eating it for 2 years, every single meal, and they just had enough.
Well, that's going to lead me to my very favorite chapter, which is about being sick and tired. Wait, what was it? Sick and tired. Yes.
Yeah, I'm sick of this.
Yes. So we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. We have to take a very quick break. If you've been listening to this and maybe you're in a position of transition as well, and you're wondering, what would it be like to be in the land between and how can I get out of there? Well, you might want to give us a call. We have a copy of Jeff's book to give away. We will put all of those requests into a drawing. We'll do that at the end of the show. So if you do want a copy, give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. And we'll be back with Jeff Mannion to talk more about being sick of being stuck in the desert. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Great to have you here this afternoon. I'm Joe Rathmanner, and today privileged to be speaking with Pastor Jeff Mannion about his book, The Land Between, Finding God in Difficult Transitions. That song by Sarah Groves kind of makes me laugh every time I listen to it because it's so true. The Israelites started complaining and saying, oh, it was so great to be in Egypt. We had food and it was green and we had things, even though they forgot that they were slaves. And she articulates that so well, as do you, in your book, Jeff. Why do we get to that point where we start thinking about how great it was before we actually stepped into what God has for us?
Well, I think it can be, Joe, I think it can be the redundancy, the pattern that we get into where every day is a depressive day, every day is a confusing day, every day is a day of grief, and often in the land between, we get sick of the repetitive cycle. That passage that you mentioned about the food that they miss, Let me read this to you, just so you can kind of connect with this. And I think this only really works if you read it in a whiny voice. It's Numbers 11, and it said they craved other food and said, if only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost, also the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. But now we've lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna. And Joe, I think it was the day after day after day after day. And so, again, placing ourselves with the characters, I think that there are times when we're passing through the land between where we just go, I'm sick of this. I'm sick of getting to the end of every month and trying to figure out which bills to pay and which bills not to pay. I'm sick of going in for medical test after medical test and still not having a clear diagnosis. I'm sick of this. I'm sick of living in my in-laws' basement. I'm sick of going to a nursing home and having my mom ask who I am. I'm sick of going to bed at night and not knowing where my 17-year-old is. I'm sick of this. And there's something that if the reader is really dialed in to what's happening in the manna story and how they're sick of the manna, I think we so find ourselves there. And the dangerous thing is that they're really just not complaining about their circumstances. What they were doing, they were complaining against God. It's like they're saying, God, we were better off in Egypt. We were better off as slaves. We were better off without you. And so, Joe, I think that when we're in the land between and when this, I'm sick of this, I'm sick of this, I'm so sick of this surfaces, I think the heart is in real, real danger in that moment.
So Moses gets to that point as well, where he's almost like shaking his fist at God and saying, I don't want this. I've been to that point. I'm sure other people have been too. How can we get past that point where we don't harden our hearts toward what God has brought us to?
Well, in the story of Numbers chapter 11 in the land between, Moses has this major, major meltdown. Moses says to God, you know, why did you give me these people to lead? I mean, he didn't ask for this job. He tried to avoid it. He uses like childcare language. He says, I feel like I'm carrying a baby across the desert. And then finally he comes to the point where he just says, God, if this is how you're going to treat me, put me to death right now. If I have found favor in your eyes, let me die now. I mean, he is so exhausted. He is so ruined. And he literally at this point, death seems better to him than continuing with this leadership responsibility. And I think that there's such power in seeing Moses meltdown there, Because, Joe, Moses is not a spiritual lightweight in the Bible. And yet he has this moment where he just cries out to God. And I think it gives us permission to come to God and to with brutal honesty, just to say, I don't understand this space. I don't like this space. I don't want this space. I don't know why you have me in this space. But Joe, at least Moses is talking and he's facing the right direction and he's pouring out his pain to God. And I think that is a powerful, powerful thing.
Well, and especially in this month, as we are talking about pastors and trying to appreciate all that they do and all that they are and all that they're sacrificing in order to bring us the knowledge of who God is, that pastors must go through this. I went through that as a pastor. I was exhausted and just depleted. And this gave me permission to cry out to God. Or
yeah.
Reading the Psalms also, I mean, it gave me permission to say it's okay.
Yeah,
is
absolutely.
That typical for a lot of people who are in ministry?
I think it doesn't feel legal to cry out. I mean, David in Psalm 13, you mentioned the Psalms, is the Psalm where he goes, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and every day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over for me? This is a person tired of praying and just goes, God, it's like he says, I've got one question. How come I keep praying and you keep not doing anything? You know, and so that is just brutal, brutal honesty. And of course, the prayer ends, but I will trust in your unfailing love. And so it comes back to here I am, I'm waiting, but waiting is getting so old. I think, Joe, reading Moses' meltdown in Numbers 11, I think reading the prayers of David as recorded in the Psalms, they give us permission. And we can actually borrow their words when we feel like we've lost the ability to create our own prayers, to just say, okay, God, right there, how long, how long, how long, how long? That's exactly where I am. And like David, yet I will trust in your unfailing love. That's where I am, God. I don't understand this space. Mm-hmm. I don't like this space. I don't want this space. But God, help me to trust you in this space. Joe, I think it's what he wants more than anything else, to be trusted when we are in confusing, confusing real estate.
In fact, you write that one of the reasons, or the main reason, that they are stuck in this desert is because they are in this trust school. Talk about the importance of being there and learning what we are supposed to learn.
Absolutely. When the Israelites leave Egypt, they've been indoctrinated in generations of Egyptian idolatry. I mean, the Egyptians would worship Apis, the bull, Hekt, the frog god that climbs out of the Nile, the god of the stars. You know, it's like, you know, here a god, there a god, everywhere a god, you know. And there's like all of these different idols that were worshipped. And then they exit Egypt, and the first commandment they receive at Mount Sinai in the desert is, you shall have no other gods. It's monotheism. It's like the God of creation saying, I did it all. I am unique. I am invisible. And don't make a cow and bow down to it calling me it. It's insulting. And so they don't really know God when they leave Egypt. And they have to get to know God as they're in the desert. And so the Creator is saying again and again, I want you to know you can trust me. I want you to know you can trust me. But I'm going to lead you through 3 days without water so that you will know that I can provide water from a rock. Water from a rock is water from a dead thing. It's life from death. It's water from nowhere. It's water from nothing. And God just says, I want you to know that I can provide for you. Because, Joe, when they get into the land of promise, the Canaanite gods, Baal, the Ashtoreth poles, a fertility goddess, Ashtoreth, were all over the place. And the design of the desert were these people for these people to grow from the people of slavery into the people of trust. That was God's intent in this space.
So when we're tempted to complain and ask to be removed, is that really not receiving all that God is having us there for?
I would pray to get out of a bad situation. And so praying that it will be removed is something very normal and natural. I mean, Joseph, the his in the Genesis, not Joseph and Mary Joseph, but Joseph with the coat of many colors, his brothers sell him as a slave into Egypt. He ends up being framed for something that he doesn't do, and he's thrown into this dungeon. And there's a very important story to me that when the cupbearer to Pharaoh is also incarcerated there, he tells the cupbearer, "You tell Pharaoh I was framed. You tell him I don't belong here. You tell him I didn't do anything wrong." Joseph clearly wants out. And yet this is what's so powerful. While he is in prison, the warden keeps giving him increased responsibility. That right there is one of the most difficult spaces in life. This is a place that I don't want to be in. I will pray that God will remove me from this place. But as long as I'm here, I want to be fully present to God and fully present to other people. That, I think, is one of the biggest challenges of life. I don't want to be here. And yet, as long as I'm here, I will be alive to God and I will be alive to the people around me. Massive challenge.
So good. So the just being open to what he has for you in whatever space you're in is possibly going to determine how much you do grow from that situation.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we have a cliche. Let me start it and you finish it, okay? Time heals what?
All wounds.
Time heals all wounds. Joe, you know that's not true.
I do know that's true.
There are
people. I mean, not true. Yes, I do.
Yeah, there are people that go through an awful experience and they don't heal. In time, because of what happened to them, they become bitter and angry and poisonous. And there are other people that go through something very, very similar, almost identical, and yet somehow this grace surfaces in their life, and they end up being approachable and gracious. And so it's not that the desert, Joe, it's not that the desert produces a life of faith. It's like the desert is a greenhouse for spiritual growth, but it is also the place where faith goes to die. And we decide. Our reaction to what we're going through can often have a bigger impact on who I am 20 years from now than the hardship itself.
So give me an example of someone maybe who has come to that conclusion of where their faith is starting to die. How can we prevent that from happening?
Well, first I would say just realize that it's happening. Realize that it's happening. And complaint, you know, that I'm sick of this. Something I write about in The Land Between is I said, you don't have to invite complaint to show up. You know, complaint arrives as an uninvited guest. It's like you get home from another miserable day or another round with something, and it's moved into your guest room and unpacked its bags, is running a load of laundry, and is rooting through your fridge for something to eat. And even as you move its bags out to the curb, you know, it sneaks back in the guest room window. And you know, complaint, it resists eviction. And so, Joe, we've heard it said that good movement pushes out bad movement, and bad movement pushes out good movement. And so I think the way to get complaint to leave is through inviting in a new guest into your house, and the guest is called trust. Trust and complaint are incompatible roommates, and one will inevitably push the other one out.
Mm-hmm. Great words from author and pastor Jeff Mannion on being stuck in the land between, finding God in difficult transitions. That's the title of his book, and we do have one to give away. So if you are interested in getting a copy, and I would highly suggest that you do, whether on this program or on your own, give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. We'll be back after the break with Jeff Mannion.
Who the he think he is? That's true to God.
welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon, bringing a bit of levity to our discussion. That was Keith Green and talking about just being stuck in that place where we might want to go back, even though that place that we want to go back to may not be the right place either. Jeff, you know, we've been talking about being in this land between, and I'm wondering, most people, when they write a book or write some wisdom on a subject, they've been in that place before. So what is it that led you to find yourself in this land between?
Wow, Joe, that's a good question. And I've been in the land between several times in my 50 years. But the first time and probably most profound time was when I awakened my November morning in the seventh grade to learn that my mother had been killed in an automobile accident the night before. My father was a pastor in the western states, southeastern Idaho. He and my mom had five children. My sister was 13, I was 12, and my younger brothers were 9, 4, and 2 months old. And my 2-month-old baby brother lived through the accident that took my mom's life. And to say that our family was disrupted would be just an understatement beyond belief. Mom was the heartbeat of our family. Mm-hmm. And so now you have a small church pastor with five children of various ages, including a baby. He decided that it was a time for us to move after my mom's death. Joe, I think they had been doing ministry together for 15 years, and I think Dad felt like he had, you know, like only half of him was there. And so he moved us to Grand Rapids, Michigan area, an affluent community called East Grand Rapids. And we were moving from potato land in Idaho, and it was a jarring transition socially to try to make my way in as an eighth grader. Months after being in Grand Rapids, my father met and proposed to a recent graduate of the Bible College where she worked. And months after our move, a year and a month after my mom's death, I received a 21-year-old stepmom. Mm-hmm. And Carolyn has been a godsend to our family. She's one of the most gracious people you would ever meet. But it just doesn't take a lot of imagination to know of the challenge in going from single college graduate secretary to immediate mother of five and pastor's wife. And so that was an additional layer of difficulty. And it wasn't that someone was, you know, trying to take my mom's place. It was more like having a big sister with a lot of authority, you know. And then after being in Michigan for 2 years, my dad announced that we were moving to Northern California, yet another move. So I had all of my grade school years in this potato farming community in southeast Idaho. And one funeral, one wedding, and two cross-country moves later, everything had changed and then changed again. Nothing was the same in our lives. And Joe, I think that those transitions, that God was at work in preparing my heart for someday to be able to serve people who woke up to news that they didn't want to receive, who were thrown into a season of confusion like someone that's thrown from a moving train, who had to deal with grief, family adjustment, and geographic moves at the same time. And so as devastating as that was for me and for my family, I think the Lord was preparing me to someday serve individuals who go through a divorce that they didn't want, a runaway teenager, job loss that is financially crippling, and just being able to say from my own experience, I believe that God will be faithful. I believe that he will be good to you. I think that he will provide for you in ways you never imagined. And also to say, guard your heart, guard your heart, guard your heart, because this might be a season of incredible provision from God. It's also the place where faith goes to die. And often the decisions of the heart that we make determine, you know, which direction this goes.
I'm so sorry for your loss, Jeff. And did you know at the time, I mean, as you think back about it now, Did you have any kind of inkling at the time that this was a point in time where God was building trust in you? Or is that something that came much later? And I ask that because I feel like there are people who are in a position that you just described where it does feel hopeless. And I'm wondering if they're somehow able to see that or if it's okay to just be wandering for a while. How do you guard your heart?
Well, I was 12 at the time, I November of my seventh grade year. And so I'm not certain that I had the emotional or spiritual clarity at the point to be able to process this is what God may be doing. He may be up to something good. And so it was just difficult and awful. And at the same time, God provided for us in incredible ways. And I think, Joe, one of the challenges is you open your hands to release to God the pain and confusion you're experiencing. Like Moses said, this is too heavy. I can't carry this anymore. I can't live through this. And yet you keep your hands open. Keep your hands open to receive whatever gift God would bring. Because sometimes in the middle of a terrible mess, our gracious God is pleased to send his gifts in unimaginable and unexpected and unpredicted ways.
Jeff, we have someone who has called in just to offer some comments about the timelessness of this. I think, yes, we'd love to hear from you. Angela, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What are your comments?
I just wanted to say I'm so grateful for your message today. My prayer 2 hours before listening to your program was the exact words that you used was, God, I'm sick of this. I can't carry this anymore. The monotony of the day after day of things not changing and waiting for you to help me through this is getting old and then the burden is getting heavy. And so that your message has just been a blessing today.
Angela, I'm so pleased at God's timing. And our Lord, there's a day, Angela, when his disciples come to him and they say, would you please teach us how to pray? And the prayer that Jesus says is what we call the Lord's Prayer. There's just a beautiful line in it where he says, give us this day our daily bread. Something so powerful about that is, dear God, please give me today what I need today. Not necessarily next week, next month, or next year, but give me today the patience I need today. Give me today the hope I need today. Give me today the wisdom I need today, because I don't know if I'm going to make it through today without your provision. Mm-hmm. Angela, I'm so grateful for your heart and so grateful for your call.
Angela, thanks so much for calling. And Jeff, thanks so much for your words for her. There's one thing that we haven't talked much about, but you mentioned in your book that this could also be a time when you're stuck or when you're waiting or when you're trusting that it's a time for God's discipline, especially if we go into that dark place where we begin to resent and become bitter. Can you talk a little bit about God's discipline and how that fits into this story?
Yeah, the Israelites in the desert, it is not their best moment. And because their hearts rebel, not just once or twice in a questioning manner, but because their hearts get so hard, they end up receiving a severe discipline. Like one of the severe disciplines is wandering in the desert for 40 years when they needed to be there much less time. And I talk with our church too, Joe, just about the nature of discipline and that discipline is always attempting to rescue something. Discipline is inflicting pain, but it's for a redemptive purpose. Inflicting pain for a redemptive purpose. It's like the parents telling their child that gets the cell phone for the first time. And as the kid is finally holding a cell phone, the mom or dad says, okay, now look at us. If you lie to us about where you've been, who you were with, or what you did, you will yield that cell phone up for 1 month. We will make you Amish for 4 weeks. You will go back to the dark ages. And if there's a day when the child lies and they hold out their palm and they say, give us the phone. And there's, drama, tears, drama, to yield up this phone for a month. But the parent the parent is attempting to rescue something, because it's not simply that the child lied to them. It's they don't. When this child exits their house after 18 years or whatever, they don't want the child lying to anyone, not to their kids, not to their husband, not to their boss, not to their employees. And just the understanding, you know, we're not raising children. We're raising adults. We're raising child raisers. And so if we truly love someone, discipline is part of the program. It's part of the programs as we raise our kids. And it was part of the program in the desert as God was attempting to cultivate his people.
So, and sometimes that discipline, I mean, if I think about Jonah and being swallowed by that whale, that was really a way of God rescuing him from something that could have been even worse.
And discipline rescues. Yeah. When it's done right and when it's done fairly, that's the intent. We don't always respond to it by being rescued, but that's God's intent in our lives.
That's more something we can think of later on down the road, but it sure doesn't feel good at the time.
No way. Yeah.
Well, Jeff, we have to take a quick break, but we are going to come back and talk more about the book, The Land Between. And if you have a question or comment for Jeff, I'm sure he'd be love to take your call and take your question. You can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Or if you have a comment you'd like to submit online, you can do that as well. Just go to myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith show page, and there'll be a way for you to submit your comment that way. And we will be right back with Jeff Mannion. John Waller, Well, I'm Waiting, just talking about how regardless of the position that we're in or the desert that we feel like we're walking through, an openness to serve God with all that we have and that with all that we are is going to bring likely good results. Yes, Jeff?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But waiting is the challenge, isn't it?
It's hard to wait in line to buy your groceries. I mean, waiting for life changes is incrementally hard.
You know, particularly when you don't know how long you're going to wait. I mean, in a grocery line, at least you can look at the person in front of you and say, okay, they've got six items, and the person in front of them has four. But sometimes when we're in God's waiting room, it's like, how long am I going to stand here? My daughter and her son, they live in Chicago, and when we ever visit them, we take the elevated train, you know, we take the L, and they've got these on several of the stops. I'm not sure they have it on all of them, but many of them, they've got these flat screen TVs telling you when the next train arrives. So you look up and it says, you know, next train 7 minutes or 12 minutes or 2 minutes. And you look up and say, okay, I'm standing here, but at least I know. And I just went, oh my goodness, how we wish we had one of those, you know, in life that said, oh, don't worry, the house will sell in, you know, 6 months, 3 days, you know.
That is a great illustration. I'm going to think about that the next time I'm being impatient, which will probably be in about 30 minutes. I'm not sure what I'll be impatient about, but there will likely be something today. So we have a caller who called in but didn't want to talk but wants to ask his question. This is from Charles. He says, how do you help someone who has been let go from a Christian job and has become bitter about it? Can you speak to that? Ouch.
Ouch. I think that being let go from any job, there's pain, frustration, difficulty that is involved. Sometimes when it's a ministry, a church or other ministry, there's an additional topspin because there's a sense this was my spiritual family. We were close. If you feel it was unjust, you would hold a Christian organization or church at a higher standard. But bitterness of any shade, it's just nasty and has to be uprooted. And Joe, that's the term the Bible uses, is a root a root of bitterness, because it starts to send its tentacles down into our lives to take hold. And if we feel justified in our anger, our jaw begins to clench, and we go, I have a right to be angry. The problem is that when we water that hurt and we fertilize that hurt, we're becoming a bitter person. And 20 years from now, we might be alienating people because we've got this edge to us. And I just challenge people all the time that your response to what happened to you is probably going to make a bigger difference 20 years from now than what happened to you. Your response to the firing, your response to a wife leaving you or a husband leaving you. Joe, when someone experiences a divorce that they do not want, there are people 20 years later who are angry, embittered, poisonous. Their kids don't want to be around them. And there are other people that are walked down on and somehow cling to God during that time and say, okay, it was unjust, it was not right, it was not fair. And yet I believe that God is good, and I believe he can transform my spirit. And there's a clinging that takes place that empowers that person 20 years later to be gracious, approachable, and giving. Same thing happens to two people, and one person rooted out the bitterness and one didn't. It makes a massive difference in who we become.
It seems so difficult to do that at the time when that hurt is so apparent, though.
Yeah, and it's a process. I don't think it's something we do in an afternoon. I think it's a process.
Charles, I hope that is encouraging to you. Jeff, as we're reading the story of the Israelites, what does eventually happen at that moment when they are just about to enter the promised land? I remember reading that and being a little bit disappointed.
Well, the manna events happen in Numbers chapter 11, and just a couple chapters later, there's the event where spies are sent into the land to check it out, and two spies come back, Joshua and Caleb, saying, God has given this to us and promises to us, and he is able. And 10 spies said, we are going to get creamed. And literally, a group decides to go back to Egypt that night. They want to kill Moses, you know. And what happened was that God had been for 2 years been cultivating a people of trust. And then finally, the opportunity comes for them to respond in trust, and they just say, no way. And that leads to the disciplinary action that keeps them in the desert for a whole generation. It's tragic. Again, this is not their final. This is not their finest moment. It's in the New Testament. I think it's in 1 Corinthians, Joe. The Apostle Paul says, no. Those desert things that happened, read those, see how they responded. Those happened, and they're an example to us that we would not harden our heart against God. And so sometimes you learn, when you read it from a character of the Bible and you're learning with them, sometimes they're not learning much of anything, and you don't learn with them, you learn from them. And I think that's the case with the wilderness wanderings.
Absolutely. As you speak with people in your congregation, people who write, who've read your book, what is the chief complaint or frustration surrounding this subject that you find that a lot of people are facing today? Just speak to those who may be in a position and just want to know they're not alone.
I think some of the themes that emerge, my life changed with a single conversation. There's been an accident. I don't love you anymore, and I don't know that I ever did. Mom, Dad, I'm pregnant. Dad, I'm at the police station, and I need someone to bail me out. Your mother and I are getting a divorce. Your position has been eliminated. The tests are back, and it is cancer. And you're thrown, hurled into the land between. And so one of the themes is just this initial shock. And that's what I experienced when I woke up as a seventh grader and learned that my mother had been killed in an automobile accident the night before. You're just thrown into this space. Another theme that emerges is lack of preparedness. And I'm not sure I'm prepared for this. another theme that emerges is needing to trust in God and seek God every single stinking day. That it's not something that we trust God for in January and we're good till the following April. A lot of times there's this clinging that takes place. And another theme is that undetected and unrooted complaint and bitterness are natural responses. And we have to do everything in our power as people of faith to seek God's grace and to seek his wisdom and to seek his strength to become the people he created us to be.
You know, that land that we hate so much seems like it can and does produce fruit that we're not even expecting if we just give it the chance. What has been your experience with that?
Yep, that's the challenge. The space that we most detest can become the very soil to grow the things we so desperately need. And Joe, I think one of the biggest things is the issue of provision that God provides. In that story of the manna and Moses meltdown, this is too heavy, I can't carry this anymore, God provides 70 leaders for Moses. And then he provides this mother of all quail migrations to give the people, you know, meat to eat, to supplement the manna. And so I think God, I just ask the question again and again, what if he still does this? What if he loves to provide? What if he loves to provide for people who are depressed? What if he loves to provide for people who are broke? What if he loves to provide for people who have burdens that are so heavy they don't know they can carry it another 3 feet? And so what if he loves to provide?
And the promise that he does make a promise that things are going to, that his will is going to be accomplished. And he made that to the Israelites. They trusted Moses to take them to that place, and they had to continue to trust and to trust again. So I think what I'm hearing a lot from you and what I've seen in my life as well is that you don't just take one pass through this desert, do we?
No. The most traumatic time was 7th, 8th, 9th grade years, but yet I've been there a couple more times since. In ministry, I've pastored the same church now for 31 years, and so as the church has grown and changed, we've been here more than once.
So when you know that you're entering it again and you don't want to go and you resist it, how can you encourage someone to just stay the course?
Yeah, and the prayer that I offer again and again personally, and the prayer that I coach people to pray, is, God, I don't like this space, I don't want this space, I don't understand this space, but I will trust you in this space. And by trust and by having faith, I mean something very specific. God, I have faith that you're good, even though this is a mess. I have faith that you're good. God, I have faith that you're wise. And I have faith that you love me. And so trust has some very specific, it's not just trust God. Some people, particularly when you're grieving, Joe, people go, I don't even know what that means, you know, to trust God. I say, well, can you trust that he's good? Can you trust that he knows what he's doing, that he's wise? And can you trust that he really, really loves you? And that's the motivation for bringing our pain to God. One of Jesus' disciples, Peter, he was a fisherman, as Jesus calls him to be a disciple. In 1 Peter, one of his writings, chapter 5, he has these beautiful words, cast, meaning throw, all your anxiety on him. And then he adds this. Joe, you know how the verse ends? Cast all your anxiety on him because
he cares for you.
He cares for you. He cares for you. And sometimes we don't bring our anxiety to God because we really don't believe he cares. What if he cares? What if he sees? What if he knows? And what if he wants to provide for me in unimaginable ways as I cross this terrible real estate called the land between?
Jeff, we have about a minute and a half left before I have to close the show. I would love if you would just pray for those who may be in this position, and then we can say goodbye.
Absolutely. Gracious God, I have seen you faithful in people's lives again and again. People in grief, people in confusion, your sons and daughters in times of loss. Lord, my sincere prayer is that you would restore their laughter and return their joy, and may they be able to trust you day after day after day as they journey through this desert in life. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pastor Jeff Mannion, thanks so much for joining us for this hour. It's been a blessing to me. I know it's been a blessing to our listeners as well.
Joe, it's been a delight to be with you today.
Absolutely. And if you would like to nominate your pastor again for that getaway, you know he or she deserves it and could probably use it as well. Head to our website at myfaithradio.com. You can look for that for the details. And if you want to get more information about Jeff or his book, we'll have that information on our show page as well. Thanks for joining us and have a wonderful day.